One, roll the footage. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Simon Severino, your host. And I had to bring Sunny on the show because he is the founder and CEO of Vestech, a Los Angeles-based emerging tech company specializing on AI and everything tech around it to help you really use this wonderful technology that's changing the world for good and for bad. So I want to know, what are these huge fears that AI is triggering in us? And what's the opportunity and how can we navigate that? And especially, of course, how can we make impact with AI, using it, utilizing, leveraging it for whatever you are doing? So welcome, everybody. Sunny Abdul-Jabbar.
Hello, Simon. Thanks for having me. Such a pleasure.
Great to have you here, Sunny. Big admirer of your work. And recently, not just your book went really, really well. We have to talk about your book later. But let's start with one of your recent posts that went viral. Why did that one go viral?
You know, that's a very interesting question. And I experienced a similar phenomena when we launched the book back in November. It became a bestseller within the first week. I kept thinking, why? And then, as you know, that we post on social media, we create content around AI and emerging tech quite routinely, almost on a daily basis. And, we get some traction. But then two of my recent posts, interviews like these, that a host from Australia and another host from the United States, they interviewed me and then they cut clips out of the interview, posted on social media, and they went viral. It was a similar conversation as every other interview, but why they went viral? And viral means it was like 40x, 40 to 50x. In one case, 40x, other case, 50x traction. Across all platforms, not just one. And I kept thinking, why? What's the common denominator between the book that we published in November and then these two viral posts? And the common denominator that I found is the threat and fear around AI. AI has almost become almost like a faith and religion. People make statements like, I either believe in AI or not believe in AI. It reminds me of the vaccine, COVID vaccine days. I believe in the vaccine or not believe in the vaccine. It's like, come on, it's not God, deity that you have to believe or not believe, it's science. So what happened in these posts is that people took the believer, quote unquote, position and the non-believer position. Mm-hmm. And then they're going after at each other. They're arguing, they're debating the non-believer side. They're flat out denying that any information about AI is fake news. It's a hoax. It doesn't even exist. And the other side, who are the believers, they are almost thinking of AI. Simon, you're not going to believe this. Imagine biblical promise of the afterlife.
Yeah.
That's how people, believers
just
are taking
it. The NVIDIA prize, people think it's the savior.
It's the savior. Yeah. It's the savior. And it's like, all the problems are going to go away and AI is going to build this paradise in which humans are going to live forever and there is no death and there is... So, I mean, if you think about the singularity concept, that's essentially the equivalent of, you live forever in God's paradise, that kind of concept, right?
It is.
So the conversation has gone to that level. And of course, then there are people who are actually building the damn thing, right? So there's that. But going back to your question, why it turned, the viral post became viral is because, so one of them was a story of a crime that took place in Hong Kong not too long ago. You may have heard of it. And it was a person, a bank employee, received an instruction from the CEO of the bank saying that transfer these many millions of dollars to another account outside the bank. And the employee got suspicious. He emailed back to the CEO saying that, can you please meet with me in person and give me this instruction? And the CEO said, oh, since I'm, I think CEO actually lives in a different country. He said, we can meet on Zoom and also invite XYZ of your colleagues, and we'll have a Zoom call, and I will instruct you on the Zoom call in front of all these people. So the Zoom call takes place, CEO comes online, few other employees who this first employee knows everybody, they all come online. The meeting takes place, the CEO says, okay, move these many millions of dollars to this outside account. Later, the employee moves the account, only to find out that the CEO and all other employees, with the exception of the very first one, they were deep fakes. They were AI bots. They weren't real people. So money got moved out. And so that's the story that I shared in one of those clips. It's a real story. It's on CNN. It's on BBC. It's on all media. Like, you can search, you know, AI bank hoax.
So understand why it went 50x. Because it's touching something that we all feel, and that is, latest next week, we will not know if the person calling us is actually our wife or not, mm-hmm. or if it's a bot.
It's the fear,
yeah. We will not know. You have elections coming up in the US. We mm-hmm. will have so much disinformation, and we just will not know which is which.
Well, we are already receiving, in the context of elections, we've been seeing videos and audios of political leaders from both parties, Republicans on the other side, and Democrats. And later turns out that they're not true.
We will have calls from our children. We will have calls from our children. Hey, Dad, mm-hmm. Dad, I went out from school. I need help. There is a policeman yeah. here with me. And then the policeman will say, yeah, he needs help. Please send him mm-hmm. $3,000 in Ethereum. And then we go, okay, mm-hmm. on Ethereum, maybe there's something sketchy here.
Yeah. I think the fear is, it's I can't trust my reality anymore. In the past, if I saw you on a Zoom call, there was a level of trust that, yes, Simon is there. I mean, you and I, we have never met in person, but we have seen each other. We have known each other for some time now, and we speak quite frequently. I have a level of belief and trust that Simon is a real person. It's not an AI. Are you? No, you're not. Okay. So
you could be called by Simon, and it's actually an AI.
Simon.ai, right?
Yeah.
But what if we can't trust our reality? What if we can't trust our eyes, our senses? I think that's the fear that's driving people to either, quote unquote, believing or not believing. And then that's fueling the whole, the viral aspect of the posts and book and all that.
Absolutely. And so that's the fear part. The fear part is based on a reality that is, technology is so advanced, it mm-hmm. will create copies of the people that are dear to us, and they mm-hmm. it will talk to us like it's them.
Yeah.
And on the other side, we could also have a strawman argument for the savior argument. I think I'm in the savior camp because I'm a mm-hmm. liberal, and I'm a technology enthusiast, and I'm a capitalist at heart. Mm-hmm. So what I am seeing since 20 years is the price of compute going down, mm-hmm. productivity going up, the price of electricity actually going down. This is mm-hmm. debatable, but I see a future in 10 years where compute is cheap, electricity is cheap, and yeah. and human productivity is extremely high. And so that's a little bit a saving our mm-hmm. society, which has a very low productivity right now and high inflation, but that could save the inflation problem, the productivity problem, and by that also mm-hmm. some social problems that we have. And if you extremify that view, you get into savior camp, right?
Mm-hmm. So I know we are jokingly playing with the word savior and the deniers, right? I put myself in the skeptics camp, even though I am very much hands-on involved in the evolution of AI and building AI-powered products and all that. The reason why I call myself skeptic is not because I question the existence of AI, because I see it with my eyes every day. Skeptic because cautiously optimistic, I guess, is a better word. Actually, delete skeptic. Cautiously optimistic. Cautiously optimistic means that I do believe in the potential of AI and other emerging technologies. Everything that you listed, I believe in that. I believe that that's a possible future, a possible future. And that's where cautiously hopeful comes from. I believe that there are steps that need to be taken in terms of regulation around AI, putting guardrails around AI, putting ethics and morality into AI. My book is all about that, you know, giving human values to AI. Actually, where you are, EU Parliament just passed a bill today, earlier today. This is about the regulation around AI based on risk categories. They came up with 5 risk categories, the extreme being totally unacceptable, and the lowest being, you know, doesn't matter kind of thing, and everything else falls in between, and then different rules apply based on different risk categories. So EU becomes actually the first place in the world where they have this much well-defined regulation. I haven't read the whole bill yet. I am a believer that without proper regulation, it's very hard to make any technology mainstream, evolving it to a degree. Because if I don't know the rules of engagement and I come to you and say, Simon, buy this new software, you're going to say, what are the rules of engagement? And if we don't have those, you're not going to want to do business with me because of liability and risk and all that kind of stuff. And take it to cities level or governments level or large corporations level, they're not going to touch it. So that's why regulation is important. The other, the potential unintended byproduct of that is, what if regulation is so mindless that it starts hindering the development of that technology?
So like Google Gemini, that you ask it about something in Germany in the 1900s and it shows you a bunch of Indians.
Yeah, bunch of what?
A bunch of Native Americans. And it shows you the Germans as Native Americans.
Yeah, yeah.
To be politically correct.
Go. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So therefore, I do believe that, yes, everything that you listed earlier, the expectation and hope from AI, that's a possible future. But in order to make that, to manifest that possible future, there are things that need to be done today. Regulations, important. Teaching AI proper values, making sure that, you know, the model bias and the data biases, they're not impacting how AI works. And taking a more mindful, more cautious approach. Reason being, when I say, look, AI is a biggest fear, AI is going to take away jobs. That's the biggest fear. AI is going to steal my job. My response is like, no, AI is not stealing your job. AI is making redundant work away. So it becomes optional for you to work in certain areas or not. Some people have argued that, look, you know, when we went from horses and buggies to cars, horses didn't go away. Well, they did. Many of them did. And horses and buggy related professions, they may be around, but not to the degree where they were in the early 1900s. Cars made horses obsolete. AI can potentially make humans obsolete if we are not thinking of AI and developing AI as a tool, as an extension of ourselves, not as a replacement of ourselves. I know personally that some of the companies have tried to replace AI, replace humans with AI rapidly. There's a company here locally in LA. They replaced their entire call center with AI, with bots.
Klarna, the payment software, Klarna, just replaced 700 people with AI.
There you go. And I am aware of another company. They're letting go about 25% of their workforce this week. And they're like, oh, we're going to replace it with AI. And the first company that I mentioned, they replaced that entire call center. Within 2 months, they had to rehire people. Because you can't think of AI as a replacement. You have to think of it as an extension. Then it works. At least in the current paradigm, with the current level of technology.
Yeah, it's like a co-pilot, like Microsoft calls it even co-pilot. Mm-hmm. It can do stuff with you, and it can amplify you. If you're a developer, you can be a 7x, a 10x productive by using that. And so there are specific tasks like copywriting, creating creatives, creating images, creating text, creating lines of code, researching, a legal issue, research in general, like analysts that would look for numbers, like rank 10 companies by their free cash flow. That thing can be done by an AI quicker, faster, without a human. But we still need the prompting person, right? The person telling the AI what to look for.
Yeah. It's a new skill, it's a new job category. I don't think it's going to be prompting is I don't think it's going to be a job for very long. Currently it's a job. You can actually get a job as a prompter. I think in the future it's going to become a necessary skill on your resume. Like, you know, we expect when we hire somebody, we expect that they know how to type, for example.
Good right? communication you know, so we'll, skills, good prompting skills.
Good prompting skills, right? Would it be soft skill or hard skill? I don't know. So
good question.
Don't know yet. Yeah. But and still, I mean, you know, I think I'm pretty good at prompting. I do it all the time and I you know, that's my bread and butter. So I learn it. Still, yes, 2 days ago, I was testing one of the LLM models for data analysis. And it gave me a response to a complex equation that I asked it to solve. And then I said, your response is wrong, redo it. It redid it and gave me a different response, mm-hmm. also wrong. And the third time I said, mm-hmm. no, the first one was correct, actually. When I said, you're wrong, it gave me a wrong answer. Then I said again, you're wrong, it gave me wrong answer again. Then I said, okay, try all possible answers and give me the right answer. Mm. And then it gave me the right answer again, wow. the same answer that it gave me first. Right, so the thing is evolving, the tools are evolving, but it goes to your statement. Currently, it's the focus should be on learning how individuals can add this as a skill to their skill set, and organizations, how they can add it as a tool to their tool set when they're serving their customers.
So far, I have been asked by people, how can they use AI in marketing and in sales? And I found a couple of use cases, how we help them with that. What are people asking when they approach you? What is it that they need from you right now?
Oh, right now, many, many customers, potential customers, the mindset is, you know, that red pill or blue pill mindset, the, you know, the Matrix analogy. It's like, give me this pill and it's going to solve all my problems. Mm-hmm. Give me AI, it's going to fix all my problems. Last
and
year, it was give me blockchain.
Are these operations problems, hiring problems, cost? What kind
so
of
that's problem? Where I try to take the conversation when I'm told, oh, we want to adopt AI for competitive advantage. But yeah, but where? Mm-hmm. So my suggestion is, my advice to these organizations is start with, look at two things, your process flow and your data. Wherever you have data, AI doesn't do anything without data. Mm-hmm. Now, LLM tools, GPT tools, or any AI tools itself, it doesn't give you competitive advantage by default. You and I both have access to ChatGPT for $20 a month, right? So it's not a competitive, if both can have it, then it's not a competitive advantage. You and I mm-hmm. both have the same tool. Mm-hmm. But the competitive advantage is when Simon uploads all his writings from the last 6 years, 10 years into a custom GPT that Sani doesn't have access to, now Simon has a competitive advantage mm-hmm. because Sani doesn't have access to that data, right? So it's the data that gives you competitive advantage, not the tool itself. So to going back to your question, what companies are asking and how we respond to them, companies are asking, well, I want AI, give me AI so I can gain a competitive edge or solve my problems. Mm. My response is look at your process flow, then see where you have the most amount of data available. Those are your low hanging fruits. Those are the places where you can start. Mm-hmm. And if you just think on, you know, for the sake of this conversation, what is standard everyday business? Where do we see most data? We see most data in finance. We see most data in sales, you know, and then everything else.
Customer right? service, maybe, customer support. Yeah.
I mean, customer support, marketing, these things, their data is not as clean and mm-hmm. as abundant as the data in sales and finance, mm-hmm. because that's your bread and butter. If you don't know what's, I mean, you're a sales expert. If you don't know your numbers, how are you going to run a sales organization?
Oh, maybe that's why I love sales and finance specifically. I spend most of my time in those two categories because it's a numbers game. It's so
it's
fair.
Game,
it's so transparent. It's a numbers game. They either go up or down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So that's why when you look at AI adoption in industries or in departments within organizations, it's the finance first, mm-hmm. finance, financial services, banks, you know, everyone in that category, that's first. Mm-hmm. And then everything else. Industry-wise, I think healthcare is second. But the point is, wherever you have data, abundance of data and reliable data, that's where you start when it comes to AI.
I'm working with a bank right now, and they were asking me, Simon, in our sales team has just 24 hours, but we have potentially 4,000 people that we could call. So can AI help me prioritize the people that we should call today? And so we played around for a couple weeks. And of course, AI can read the emails, can even read right now also the Zoom calls now. So it prioritized based on the language, based on the conversation and the patterns in there. It gave them every day, hey, these are the top 5% people you should call first, because there is a better relationship according to the language. Yeah. And so there is a higher probability of upsell, cross-sell. They did it, and they reported 71% increase in sales.
Amazing.
It cost them $1,000 to run that thing.
Isn't it amazing?
And some of our coaches, but you know, 71%, it's a lot.
Now, let me give you a testimonial then. In one of our conversations on your... I forgot which segment was that. So some of us were there and we started talking about the VIP list of your prospects. And so I came back and I kept thinking, what's VIP list? Like how to define that VIP list? I didn't want to just, you know, guesswork. I wanted to have some quantitative way of doing it, kind of like what you did. So we used AI to go through all communication with everyone in our CRM. So in our CRM, we currently have couple hundred thousand probably prospects. And so we went through all of that and looked at their communication, written communication mostly. And we looked at words of intent, anything that indicates intent at any point over the last X number of years. And we realized that there are these, you know, a short list of people who expressed intent and, and then we went even deeper, like, you know, when they stopped, when they did they just go quiet or did they make an excuse? If there was an excuse, what was that excuse? Things like that. And then we identified a small data set of prospects and we started reaching out to them. 100% response rate, 100% email opens rate, 100% callback rate, 100% communication. And we were able to sort of rekindle our communication with these people over the last few months after that call. So thank you for hosting that event where this idea came up. And, you know, we've been implementing it.
Thanks for sharing that. Yes, buyer intent can save you so much time. So right now, some of our clients, they're using Apollo because Apollo has acquired a buyer intent software. And so they incorporated it. And now when you buy leads on Apollo, you get them by high intent, medium intent. So you can basically fish the internet for people who are looking for your services, five things that they're looking for. Turns out the quality of data of these platforms is deteriorating. Maybe it's so easy to make money right now, and so you start mixing in people who don't have actual buyer intent, because our team has been calling some of them, and they were, no, I never looked for that in the internet. So there will be a period of consolidation in the industry, where we find out where is the actual quality data. But if it's your own data, right? Your clients are using their own data. Then that's
good. Yeah. That's, well, yes. But then you run into a situation where most small and mid-sized businesses, they don't have a large pile of data. AI and machine learning, these kind of, you know, pattern detection algorithm type things, they work when you have large amounts of data. So if you are looking at proprietary data only, then we are pretty much left with like larger organizations, either very large or even the upper end of the, the middle market companies. Because smaller companies, they simply don't have that much data or it's not clean enough. Our own CRM, like I advocate data all the time, but our CRM was nasty. There was everybody there. From, you know, cold callers to telemarketers to people who had no intent ever, you know, everything was there because we never actually sat down and cleaned up. You always have to think about, you know, priorities and bandwidth and all that. So in recent months, last year, we actually sat down with intent to clean the data, because otherwise AI tools weren't going to work. So we were forced, and this is a good byproduct of the AI evolution. Companies are now forced to look at their data. So data is not a sideshow anymore. It's the main event, right? You're forced to clean your data. You're forced to maintain your data, because without it, you can't use those AI tools. And to your earlier statement about Apollo and industry consolidation, so what happens is that, you know it, you've been around long enough, that there are, whenever there is a new emerging tech coming to market, there are these stages where first technology is in the hype phase. Everybody's talking about it. AI conversation didn't start in the November of 2022 when ChatGPT came out. We've been talking about it for the last 10 years or more, 10, 15 years. So it was always in hype. Then currently we are still in hype. And eventually hype ends, and then you go into more, you know, operationalizing and all that. There are good things about hype as well. It brings a lot of attention, a lot of resources, a lot of investments to that technology. So that's a good thing. The bad thing is everyone starts claiming to be an expert in that technology. Mm-hmm. If you remember in the blockchain days, in the crypto days, when crypto was a hype, now it's not a hype now, it's a mature market. It was a hype at one point. There was a tea company in Florida in the United States, and they started saying something, you know, teaname.coin or something. And all of a sudden, their stock just went through the roof overnight, literally, right? It was a tea company, like, you know, those cold teas. So that kind of stuff happens. Currently, what I'm seeing is everyone is putting .ai next to their domain.
Yes.
And when you talk to them, it's like, where's the .ai part? Recently, I sat in a pitch session with a company, founders of a company, something .ai, they came in, they're like, oh, we have this wonderful product, it can do XYZ, blah, blah, blah. And they kept talking, and they're raising money. And at the end, when we said, okay, show us the demo or something, they had nothing. We said, where's the AI part? Oh, we're building it. How much have you built it? They gave us a demo. It was ChatGPT. I'm like, dude, this is not your product. ChatGPT is not your IP. You can't call it that you built it. I mean, they created a custom GPT, but they didn't build it, right? And they wanted to raise like $100+ million. And the sad part is that some of them will raise that money, right? That gives bad name to people who are actually trying to do the work, because resources are being wasted. So what you're seeing in the industry, companies claiming that they have this ability or somehow adding, in your example, data that may or may not be that high quality data, that's expected in hype phase. It will take another, I would say, at least 2 years for the hype to kind of simmer down a little bit. And then we go into, you know, real deal, real stuff. Absolutely. So that's where consolidation will come handy. Some of the companies who are just claiming to be experts, they will get pushed out. People who have successfully raised money, even though they don't have technology or not even have the ability to build technology, they will get pushed out. They will run out of money. So 24 months, roughly, for the market to clean up.
We move now to the section, which is my favorite section, where I get to know you even better as an entrepreneur after one word from our sponsor. Even when you are on vacation, discover how 1,600 business owners have regained their freedom using the Strategy Sprints blueprints. How they enjoy living their dream and watching their business scale. Get the exact checklists they use to go from stressed to fulfilled using the Strategy Sprints method. Order your copy of Strategy Sprints 12 Ways to Accelerate Growth for an Agile Business on Amazon today. And if you love it, leave us a review. For more information, head over to strategysprints.com.
I endorse that message.
Oh, yeah. What makes you happy as a dog?
What makes me happy as a dog? Seeing that my projects that we are building with, you know, with a vision and intent and all that, they flourish, they work out, that makes me happy. And then, you know, the family, kids.
And Sunny, how do you supercharge your relationships?
I handle my relationships as any other project in my life, because if you don't, if you just think that relationships are on autopilot and they'll work by themselves, they don't. So you have to allocate resources and time and energy for your relationships. Relationships are built on memories. If we are not spending time together with our loved ones and building those memories together, it's hard to have strong relationships.
Oh, this is strong, built on memories. One of my favorite books, Peak Moments, I think. No, The Power of Moments is It's a wonderful book. It's all about that if we remember only the peak moment and the ending, and they go through what makes a peak moment and what makes it memorable. This is super important for everyone listening right now, what Sunny just said. And how do you protect your confidence in a tough month?
That comes from truly believing that whatever is meant to happen will happen. Some people might think of it as, you know, religious or spiritual mantra.
Inshallah.
Inshallah, right? God willing. I have come to believe in it. But things don't just happen without effort. There's a correlation between effort and happening. So you do your best, right? And then you expect that things are supposed to happen in a certain way, right? And there's no reason to freak out over them. If I have an energy company, I'll share a quick anecdote with you. So 2 years ago, I was invited to join an energy company as a partner. So we move physical commodities across the planet, fuel being the primary commodity, jet fuel, diesel, etc. For the first year, we didn't close any deal. We actually lost over $1 million. Some of them fraud, some of them mistakes, whatever. And it just didn't work. And we kept thinking. And my partners, you know, they are geniuses in their industry. One is a Oxford PhD. The other guy, he has built refineries from scratch. You know, so these guys, like, they know their stuff. I've been in business for 20 plus years. This is what I, you know, live and breathe. And nothing was working out. We were putting in, so we didn't get frustrated because month after month, we are spending in so much time and money and nothing is working. We didn't ask how much money we made this year or this month. We asked, have we done everything that we were supposed to do? Right? And so your question is, how do I keep my confidence up? I don't ask myself how much money I made that month. I ask myself, have I done everything that I was supposed to do? Right? And when you go with that mindset, it's easy to keep your confidence up because you have control over it. If I say how many deals I closed this month, I have no control over deals, right? If you are my prospect, you have the control. So I can't base my happiness on someone else's control. I can't base my confidence on someone else's decision-making or availability or mood or whatever, right? I have to base it on things that I can control, and that is what I'm doing with my hands, the activities that I'm supposed to do. If I'm supposed to send out X number of emails, have I done that? Y number of meetings, have I done that? And after that, you really have to believe if something didn't happen, it wasn't meant to happen.
Oh, I love this.
Then it saves you from anxiety, depression, and you keep going.
I love this. What is in your control and what is not in your control? And you bring up the sales example. So on Friday, my team and we'll go through the dashboard and say, okay, these are the deals that we closed and who closed which deal. But that's not actually in our control. The only six tasks that are in my control, they are my phone. And it's, you know, did I make 3 introductions before lunch? Did I ask for a referral? And
there you go.
Those are the things in my control and they're on my phone. Yeah. And I can either give my best on those or not. But on Friday, we will hear what actually happened, right?
Yeah, yeah. Results are a byproduct. You don't control the result. You control the effort. So whenever we base our happiness or our confidence on anything that's outside our control, that's a recipe for disaster. Sooner or later, we'll fail.
That's why you are successful and resilient. And what is your secret? You look better every month. I know you since a couple years now. You look better every month. What are you doing?
Nothing. You make me happy when I talk to you. That's why.
Sunny, who should contact you if they want to improve their technology, how they use data, how they use AI? Who should contact you and how can they contact you?
Mostly middle to large size organizations, leaders in those organizations, even government entities or funded startups who either have a clear idea of how they want to use emerging technologies or they're wondering how to use emerging technologies in their businesses. They should come to us. We have people in our organization who specialize in this kind of stuff. Data shows that over 78% business leaders know that AI is competitive advantage, emerging tech is competitive advantage. Less than 4% are actually doing something about it. I believe that huge discrepancy is because of lack of information, lack of guidance, fear of risk and all that. But there are people who specialize in this kind of stuff. So call us and we'll be more than happy to, you know, talk to you and guide you how to most effectively and efficiently you can acquire this competitive advantage.
And the best way to contact you, is it website? Is it LinkedIn?
LinkedIn is the best way to reach me. Also, we can be reached via the website. All contact information is on the website and I'm sure you'll share the link with this episode.
Sunny Abdul-Jabbar, everyone, with Vestech from Los Angeles. Thank you so much for being here. And please come back soon.
Thank you, Simon. It was fun.
Avoid trying to do thousands of things that doesn't work. We have 274 templates for your business success. Reach your ambitious goals with one-on-one sprint coach. We double your revenue in 90 days.